Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Rachel Smith, COO with ExchangeWire, and our very special guest in the studio today is Kevin Flood, CEO of Powerlinx. Hello, Kevin.
Hi there, guys. Thanks for having me. Delighted to follow in the footsteps of many of the great and the good of ad tech.
Well, the great and the good of ad tech will feel, very complimented on you having said that. Good to have you, Kevin. And, of course, ExchangeWire's mouthy, opinionated CEO, Kieran O'Kane. How are you, Kieran?
Hello, Rachel. how the hell are you this morning?
Kieran's just shouted at me in the office. Yeah. Didn't you, Kieran?
Yeah. Bossy boots. You have to...
Just the background, okay, the background hum of the ExchangeWire office.
Just all bad. It's all bad.
Anyway, moving right along. Okay, discussion of our first news story for the day. This is a DTC news story, and as you well know at ExchangeWire, we love a DTC news story. It was covered actually by AdExchanger very late last week. By late last week, what I mean is Good Friday, when Americans are still working and everybody else Americans. In the world is having a little
break.
Do not
break. Believe in Jesus, no?
So it was focusing on DTC betting brand Bowl & Branch moving into TV advertising to sort of expand its marketing efforts. And the reason I wanted to pick it up for us to have a quick chat about here today is because it's interesting for two reasons from my point of view. The first is that this is a move that seems to follow other DTC brands who rely heavily on social channels in the early days of trying to gain customers and establish their brand. And now we see a lot of DTC brands then moving into more traditional channels of advertising once they want to actually scale and really push their brand out there and build and grow the business beyond that sort of initial recognition. But it's also interesting because I think it says something about the emphasis or it emphasizes, right? Rather the power of TV advertising, because they've got quite the article in AdExchanger was focusing on the fact that they're using quite a data-oriented strategy to hunt down the most efficient TV spots, looking for good CPMs. So I just thought that's quite an interesting position. It speaks very much to the sort of ad tech TV opportunity, and it also says something about this ongoing conversation that we're having across ad tech and martech about how DTC brands grow and scale. So to you first, Kevin, what was your opinion of this story?
Yeah, I thought it was hugely interesting that that these fairly new startup brands are moving rapidly into TV, because I think traditionally TV is a bit of a gamble. It's a huge investment normally. You know, you can do a lot more learning and kind of test and learn approaches with social, with content marketing, search. So to them move into TV has traditionally been a kind of investment that can make or break your business. But I think the strategy that was talked about in that article of looking for kind of lower CPM opportunities, looking for daytime TV, looking for local sports, you know, that shows that these marketers are kind of growth minded, and they perhaps don't necessarily think about different channels in the traditional way. You know, I don't think, you know, if you look at the guys that have gone before, the kind of early D2C brands, Casper Mattress, Simba, you know, for some reason, they all seem to be mattress firms.
Yeah.
Eve and so on. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you look at those guys, I think they were the trailblazers. And as you said, they started in social, but they also did a lot of content marketing. And I think the approach from these kind of marketers is, number one, let's figure out where the user is. Let's create a conversation, whether that's across TV, social, search, email. You know, they're incredibly diverse marketers when you look at the way that they can kind of reach you. And I think these brands are probably looking at the opportunity in TV, thinking, okay, there are value opportunities here. We can create a lot of push opportunities where you know, essentially we're going to raise awareness. People are going to go straight from TV to search. We're going to capture the consumer. We're going to get an ID for them. And then we're going to start to actually own the relationship with that customer. And even if you don't convert customers immediately, I think what the D2C brands do better than most traditional brands is they do capture the customer in their funnel, and they get them signed up to email, and they've got incredible landing page experiences. And so any marketing channel generally that they use is going to be one that can drive the beginnings of relationship. and then can convert the relationship into a kind of owned user. So even if they're not a customer, they're signed up to your newsletter, and then you can convert them at a much lower CPA. Mm. So I think these brands will probably continue to invest across every channel. And for me, when TV becomes more connected, more programmatic, it'll actually allow you to test and learn even more. So I'd expect to see it grow, as opposed to kind of be a one-off.
Yeah.
As long as they can kind of cherry-pick those opportunities and take that data-driven approach.
Yeah. Interesting. Kieran?
So TV used to be sort of the main of large-scale FMCGs, right? So the DTC, direct-to-consumer brands, are really interesting in terms of how they're disrupting that model, right? But TV's always been kind of like a step too far. The minimum spends are quite high, and as Kevin said, it's a huge risk for a lot of data-driven minded brands like DTCs. But there's companies like Simul Media, Dave Morgan, who've sort of built a tool to actually buy some of this inventory across the TV networks. And he mentioned something interesting to me about 12 months ago, where he said that, you know, you could have like a splashy video on the homepage of CNN for like £30-40 CPM, but you could actually buy, say, a spot on daytime CNN for like £2-3 CPM. Mm-hmm. So there's value within the TV ecosystem for these brands, but it's, as Kevin said, how do you plug that in to the overall attribution model that these guys have built? Mm. And they're very data focused and ROI focused. But as I think this is a huge opportunity. Again, I think people are not realizing the opportunity within with these DTC brands. These DTC brands normally don't have agencies, and agencies kind of were the stepping stones.
Or they have a slightly different arrangement or setup with their agencies, or are working with sort of, you know, new style agency models.
Probably their execution probably is in-house, where their creative is probably done within an agency. The agency holding group was the stepping stone into the TV war, right? Mm. That's completely changed. And we're seeing a huge democratization of probably the biggest media channel in our industry, right? Mm-hmm. Which is TV. And it's very exciting. But it also sort of highlights the fact that these DTC brands will become important for ad tech, right? Whether ad tech goes directly, like Dave has gone directly to some DTC brands and offered his platform, which is fantastic because that means they can access TV via his platform. Mm. I just think there's going to be more and more opportunities like this. And I think like other channels we've talked about before, like out of home, radio and audio, these are huge opportunities. Ad tech needs to wake up to the huge opportunity that the DTC segment represents, right? Mm. I know it's very easy to go to the agencies because they've kind of like consolidated a lot of the demand in this ecosystem, right? But as we move forward, as these brands appear, and we know ourselves because our own DTC index lists about 700 or to 1,000 brands. A wonderful resource, as Kevin said. He's actually made money off it, so
fine. Yeah, that's why he thinks it's a wonderful resource.
Day one, copy-paste. I think it's been copy-based many times by a lot of people, but it highlights the point that these brands are coming, they're building real businesses, and as I said before, their cost base is lower than a typical FMCG. Their ability to use data to connect to customers, and their ability to do to lead the customer down the sales funnel at every point is stellar, right? Mm-hmm. They live and die by the first party data. I think that was a great point by Kevin. A lot of the FMCGs still haven't got there, and you can see, you know, weirdly, you can see companies like Publicis who've bought Epsilon to help those FMCGs bridge that gap. But I don't think that's going to be good enough. This is all interlinked, goes back to the fact that these DTC brands are going to be an important segment for ad tech going forward.
Mm. And what do you think about sort of the pace at which, the sort of connected TV world is moving, and whether it's in the right place for DTC brands to make best use of at the moment? So, Kevin, you made the point, you know, when connected TV, becomes a true sort of programmatic opportunity, that's really going to present something interesting to DTC brands because they will be able to trace and track everything they're doing. Are we there yet, or is there still a lot more to happen?
No, I think we're probably kind of 1%. I think guys like Simul Media, who have been at it for 5 years, have done a great job in kind of laying the foundations. And there's a London-based startup called Honeycomb that has come from the kind of content delivery world and is moving towards programmatic. And so I think there are experts in that space that are investing heavily. You know, Comcast have set up a big division, investing really heavily in connected TV and programmatic buying. But I think probably the stage that we're at right now is kind of very experimental. I think brands with big budgets are working with some of the big broadcasters to make it happen.
Mm.
But I think within a couple of years, you know, we all know things move so quickly in this space. I think within a couple of years, once you've got really easy self-service or kind of light touch onboarding, where you can test and learn, for me, that will produce more efficiency than the percentage of discount that an agency can get.
Mm.
So I think that once the efficiency is kind of 10% plus, you know, 20, 30, 40%, and I can experiment with different audiences and different spots throughout the day and use day part targeting and frequency cap my video ads, which has not been possible before.
Mm.
If I can do that, the amount of waste reduction and the amount of efficiency it'll produce will create, I think, a tidal wave of adoption, probably beginning with the D2C guys and the biggest investors like P&G and so on.
Mm.
And performance advertisers as well, like the Booking.coms, the world. Yeah. And all,
e-commerce.
All, yeah, yeah, if they can link that spend on TV back to search activity, you know, it's a really powerful story, because TV is a really good way to build brand, right? Mm. But at the minute, the measurement isn't there, right?
Yeah.
Someone would argue otherwise. But there's one good point here that Kevin touched on, is the power that TV buying gives the holding groups is incredible, right? That is slowly being eroded away. It's only going to take one or two companies to really accelerate this game. And we talked about it last week in terms of the Netflix of the world and maybe Amazon as well. Imagine Amazon opened up, made all their inventory programmatic, like, you know, their video inventory, you know, their Amazon Prime service. If Netflix does that as well, it will change the game. The dial will just be... Kevin's right. We're talking about a 5 to 10 year window here. But if one of those companies drops that, it would probably accelerate it. We're talking probably half that time before we see that. And it's very exciting, because that means that the entire game changes. The entire game. Because it means that brands, like DTC brands, can really accelerate growth. And we're going to see, like, this is really, really dangerous for FMCGs, I think, because TV was their sort of bulwark, right? The ability to scale. Holding groups were able to sort of command a lot of spend and power over the middle ground, the execution, the media companies, because of that heft. That could go away.
Mm.
And if that goes away, it could be really interesting.
Yeah, if that goes away, then the expertise relies completely on creative, you know, delivery, attribution.
Execution, trading.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think, but yeah, I think you're right. We're at kind of a pivotal moment. And actually, with the big streaming platforms like Netflix and Amazon, I think that's probably the easiest place to start. So irrespective of like ABC and ITV and Comcast and so on, you know, Netflix, Amazon, they're in a prime position to create an ad-supported model and take the first 5 or 10% market share. They're probably the closest to having full digital access. So, and actually, interestingly, I've not seen any news about this, but quite recently on my American TV, a new app popped up called IMDb Freedive, which is an Amazon-owned product. And that does provide back catalogue access, which is ad supported.
Mm.
So I think they may well be kind of already venturing.
That's interesting.
We knew
they were doing an ad supported music streaming service, but I didn't know.
Yeah, they've got like a
version.
They've got like a TV channel which they aggregate and they run ads against. Mm. It's a bit like the Roku example.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're still early days here, but. But
it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen first, right? Are we going to see the likes of Netflix dive into the ad-supported model first, or is it that we're going to start to see more and more demand from different types of brands in that TV environment that's going to also spur technology providers on the ad tech side of the fence to try to solve some of the challenges that are currently creating a bit of a barrier or slowing
things
down? Ad
tech has a massive role to play in this, because if Netflix... By the way, Netflix would have to buy ad tech to make it work, right? Mm. And if Netflix moved first, they could claim that mid to fat tail that Facebook have done so well with the DTC brands already, right? So imagine Netflix starts eating up a lot of that spend. And that would be new money, by the way. That would be new money. But it would attract bigger brands to it as well. The smarter performance DR related. There's a lot of money sitting on the sidelines here, I think, that could be going into TV that the TV companies should be embracing. But I can understand their trepidation, you know. Once you Googleize or programatize an ecosystem, they feel they could be cannibalized by that. Like, you know,
yeah, I think the money that's sat there is not sat there waiting for any one channel. The money is waiting for attributable growth. Yeah. So whether it's search or TV with attribution that can prove that it drives search or direct visits or sales, you know, that, like you said, the performance money is the unlimited pot, really. You know,
it is. Can if you grow. Can, if you can, because TV's been mostly the reserve of branding, right? And I put that in fluffy terms because it's very hard to measure that, right? But if you know, if you spent £1 million on ITV and it was going to deliver you all of those search traffic and traffic to the site, which then you could basically track into a conversion, then you will spend more money on the channels that are working. Mm-hmm. Like, you know,
I'm going to move us on.
Okay.
Second news story of the week, which is the release of the annual IAB report into digital ad spend in the UK. So this is always an important tracker for the industry. Key findings from the report this year is that the digital advertising market's now worth 13.44 billion sterling, which is a 31.5% increase in market size from 2007. Now, most of that, because this is reporting on digital ad spend in 2008, most of that has been powered by smartphone advertising, which now comprises 51% of all digital ad spend. And video is the more popular format, up from 33% in 2017, up 33% from 2017, fueled largely by smartphone consumption, which is an environment that now accounts for 76% of all video ad spend. So this is fairly healthy news for advertising and surely says something about continued opportunities in ad tech and martech. What interested in both of your thoughts on this. Kevin, let's start with you. What are your thoughts on some of these headline findings?
Sure. So obviously great news coming off of the back of the year of GDPR.
Do we have a champagne bottle we can just pop up?
Prosecco will do. Yeah. It's only
15%. So cheap English wine.
Yeah, this is ad tech.
So I think coming off the back of GDPR, it's pretty massive news. The only thing I was pretty delighted to see native making up 23% at 1.2 billion. That gives me some hope.
That's quite a lot.
It is quite a lot, but the vast majority of that is sitting Facebook. In social. So I think the big point for me is, you know, 15% growth across Europe, 40% or 39% growth in display, whatever it was. So that's pretty huge. But I think that the report doesn't necessarily break out social versus, open internet and so on. So for me, the growth driven by mobile and video is likely to be on the social channels.
Yeah.
Twitter have revamped and grown their video product. LinkedIn have released video now, which is huge and addresses a whole new market of B2B advertisers. Facebook have obviously been adding more videos to the feed, which is somewhat infuriating. And so I think you can see the growth and where it's coming from. What I would be interested in kind of looking deeper into is, how is the market, the independent market, actually represented within that? And also, you know, something that I think about all day, every day, is just how can the independent market take a bigger percentage of that search and social growth? You know, 15% growth on search is incredible because the population hasn't grown more than 15%, and we're all searching all day, every day. For that market to continue to grow means that Google are monetizing different ways of searching. You know, I'm sure they're going to be making moves into voice search and all of these new channels. And obviously they've made big moves on Google Maps. I think, you know, that there are ways and means for the independent market to compete. But I think a lot of the ad tech ecosystem is starting to drive towards connected TV, out of home, you know, all of these other sectors. And I think there's still room to look at the basics of display and see how we can kind of grab more of those search and social budgets as they grow.
Yeah. Kieron, your thoughts? It's the opportunity for independent ad tech?
It's typically vague, this report, because, you know, I'm a big supporter of the IAB, right?
No doubt about it. Yeah, me too, yeah.
But their biggest contributors are Facebook and Google, so... They kind of have also responsibility for their independent members as well. So the report is deliberately vague. So we have no idea who's actually making this money. But you can put your monthly rental allowance on it that most of that revenue growth is going to be, or most of that growth in spend is going to Facebook and Google, social and search. Search 15% of search. Growth is incredible given how much is search worth of that 13 billion? Did it say?
No, it's 50% of the total,
right? Yeah. So, 50% of the total search,
yeah.
So that means that Google are now doing 6.5 billion in search in the UK. Although, I would have to caveat that probably some of that is going to Amazon because Amazon's got a pretty big search business now as well, and a bit to Bing. So, let's just say they're doing 6 billion. Right, 6 billion in spend. You know, that means that they went up.
This is back of a cereal packet, maths
here. This is my math. This is maths. This is me.
Eyes looking to the sky.
Totally.
This is my finger in the air. Yeah. Google are doing about 6 billion in search, right? And then the rest is probably Facebook. And then I would say that 20% there is the right way. We're still 20% of that. So how do we grow that? Kevin's right. There's probably a lot of opportunity still in display. I mean, a lot of people say it's tapped out, but I don't think so. I think there's still growth for new formats, for native, a few others as well. I think the big opportunity for ad tech again is to look at those channels that have yet to be, I would say, truly, they're not data driven as of yet. So you think of TV, audio at home. These are really big areas, and all those guys are obviously those channels are looking for growth as well. So this could be a great opportunity to help to grow that pie. I kind of like it's hard to talk about these reports because they are deliberately vague, right? You know, if the headline figure if they broke out those specific things, we'd know that Facebook and Google made all the money, and the IAB doesn't want that. They don't want to be singing and dancing Google's and Facebook's praise because it just the inevitable articles will just pop up going, duopoly wins again.
Well, and also they want to support all their members, right? So, you know, the point of the report is to, I presume, is to talk about the health of the industry overall. So, you know, they want to raise those growth statistics in a helpful way and not overly focus on...
But it gets back to our point about, you know, the reason search gets so much growth is because it's focused, 100% ROI driven, right? If you could do the same to TV, if you could do the same to out-of-home, those numbers will start switching. Because, like, let's be honest here, most agencies would don't want to give all that budget. A marketer wouldn't give all the budget to Google, right? They would much prefer to be spread around. Diversify, because having one company of that level of control. I remember Google writes its own rules, right? And attribution and conversions and all the rest of it. They have such control over it. So if you can start to make those other channels more data-driven, more ROI, more accountable, then money will start shifting away from that. That's my firm belief. I don't think the search will still grow because it works. It works. Just does. Search works. But as we move more into making these other areas more data-driven, we're going to see shift of spend, which is good.
Yeah, I think... I think hats off to the IAB for the report and for dressing it up in a way that is
I'm not slagging
positive
off
because
IAB
you know
at all.
No we do you know we do a ton of work with the IAB. I love what they do. I think the tech lab
amazing.
Has really ramped up in the last few years and is rolling out phenomenal standards and
important
and ways of improving the supply chain.
We love the IAB tech lab. We support them big time.
Yeah,
I think it's really important. To kind of help with standards and technology and all the rest of it. I think they did a great job. And it's such an important organisation. I just get annoyed about the reports, that's all.
Yeah.
Well, this is a Google and Facebook gripe from Kieron, let's be honest.
Mostly.
And I think there could well be a lot of independent growth in there. We just don't know either way. But as you were saying, Kieron, I think if we can make every channel as measurable and addressable as search. You know, programmatic display is close to that, but often it's still anonymized.
There's still a
in
few
a way.
Issues, yeah.
And there is data quality issues in the supply chain. But I think again, the IAB are working on things like that. There's a huge drive to improve the supply chain. So I think if we can address the data, that will help drive more growth and or take some of that market share from search and social, because not all of your search budget works. You know, there is a 20% budget that doesn't work, and there's also a search budget that is undeliverable. You know, if you go to one of the big brands like a Verizon or an AT&T or a Procter and Gamble, you know, there are budgets that they have that they can't actually deliver because there aren't enough searchers. So if we can create that oxygen in a new space, in the independent web, if we can give them the level of targeting they need and the level of visibility, that's one big area that we can drive growth. I think the other is the creative issue, which we often overlook, which is if you look at search and social, all of them are kind of component based. It's text, it's images, it's video files. So display is the only format that stands out. You know, it's actually the niche format. So content marketing, native, social, search, all of that, it's all component based. So if we can make display more component based and more responsive, that will make it easier to onboard budgets and have fluidity between budgets. You know, and I think the market's moving that way. I think we're going to have responsive component based display across the board in the next few years. Mm. And again, the IAB has been doing work on that front.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's optimistic. It's great, good to see growth, but I always want a bit more granular information.
As ever. Okay, moving us on to the third story that I wanted to chat with you about this week. So this is relating to Q1 results for Snap and Twitter, which both came out in the news early this week and were looking a little bit better than expected. So both have enjoyed growth in daily active users. Snap in particular attribute that to an improvement in their Android app, added new features to their platform, including ad-supported gaming, which has boosted their ad revenues. Twitter also talked about platform improvements as a reason for their user growth and, you know, noted specifically that they've been tackling things like spam and suspicious accounts. And they're also growing advertising revenue using their video ad format, which has been growing a lot in popularity.
Yeah.
So this is interesting because this follows, you know, quite a long period of time of plateauing user growth. I guess it sort of says something about the stability of these social media platforms, and also points a bit to the maturity of the social media industry in some respects, in my mind. What's your opinion, Kevin?
Yeah, I'll start with Twitter because it's a more comfortable stomping ground. I think Twitter, as you're saying there, maturity, I think, is starting to show in the social space. I think Twitter, you know, have had their fair share of criticism and quite a few struggles over the years, but I think they have been working hard on cleaning up the platform. You know, I think irrespective of revenue growth, their operating costs increased 18%, and a lot of that was down to employing content moderators and people to get rid of spam accounts and so on. And I think that's an investment that will pay in the long term. So I think, you know, if you look at Twitter, they've created growth through video and new formats. There's a heavy investment in ad tech. MoPub is still probably one of the most dominant independent in-app ad platforms out there. So they're creating good growth from advertising. I think irrespective of their user growth, their monetizable daily user growth increased 12%. So actual daily usage increased faster than overall user growth. Mm. And I think that's a huge sign that they're creating stickiness in the platform. You know, I think improvements to display more video and also to provide more kind of summarized news on a discoverable daily or hourly basis is great. They've been partnering with folks like Bloomberg to actually bring professional, high-quality content into the platform. All of those things, I think, create stickiness and create a more healthy, monetizable environment. And then Snap, you know, I had palpitations when I saw it on the list because despite being a apparent millennial, have never logged into it.
What? So you badly behaved millennial.
I installed it, but then I got to the GDPR page and went, actually, no, I'm not doing it.
Not getting my data.
So a well-informed friend told me that the Snap Discover release a year or so ago is kind of coming to maturity. So they've got, again, similar to Twitter, they've got 450 channels publishing content to Snap. And I think that's what we're seeing here. I think we're seeing independent publishers actually using social channels as a way to publish their content. I'm not sure they're happy about that. I think they almost have to do that to reach new audiences. Twitter, for me, does have a stronghold in kind of news sharing and debate, like text-based commentary, as you well know. But I think Snap is maybe a little bit more vulnerable. I think, you know, Instagram nearly ate their lunch in a rapid release where Instagram just immediately looked like Snapchat and took all of the features. And I think you've got this new platform, TikTok, coming up. So Snap, I think, is vulnerable. It's got kind of a stronghold in like 18 to 24-year-olds. Half of those people aren't easily monetizable because of COPPA and like children's privacy protection. And, you know, I think their growth is positive, but probably built on more sandy foundations.
Interesting.
But interested to see how it plays out.
Yeah, that's a good one. Sandy foundations. What do you think, Ciarán?
So the word probably that is most relevant to both these companies now is utility, right? So Evan Spiegel, his name. He mentioned utility in the actual earnings call. Twitter is just one of those go-to platforms for most people. It's kind of like where you gauge the human sort of consciousness, as someone said recently. It's sort of like where you find your daily fix on news and debate. And it's become like a message platform for the world, basically, good and bad, because you obviously have the United States president, you know, dictating policy through the actual platform itself and others. Like Elon Musk sort of venting his rage against the various oversight organizations in the US, from transfers to finance. But Evan Spiegel mentioned utility for Snap, and like, you know, the number growth hasn't been huge, but they have a strong hold in that millennial sort of market, right? So they use it on a day-to-day like a communication platform. And he's sort of investing a lot now in sort of ad tech, if you will, but more like an ad network, right? So he saw the success of Facebook ad network, which is probably $5 to $10 billion business for Facebook, and he sees the opportunity to building a fairly strong revenue model there with gaming. And also he's very clever in the sense that, well, his underlings are probably clever because it's probably them that's driving the strategy there. That he's opened up the platform. He's not made it less closed and be able to open up, connect to different platforms elsewhere and sort of open up Snap to sort of like third parties and all the rest of it, make them use the Snap platform, but not trying to sort of, you know, foist their ad monetization on top of them, right? It just brings people back to the platform.
So you could argue he's well aware of the kind of, as Kevin phrased it, sandy foundations how the company has been born and kind of grown up, and he's looking for ways
to make it more sticky.
That's right. Yeah.
And if you open it up and make it more sticky, there is a huge opportunity from there. I think that Snap went through that kind of like phase of being an innovator and then being copied by
Instagram,
the biggest social media platform. Let's remember, Instagram didn't start copying Snapchat until
Facebook's power behind it. Yeah.
And you've got Mark Zuckerberg, who obviously was irate because he couldn't buy Snap, decided I'll destroy them, right? But, you know, Snap hung in there, and now they're maturing as a platform, and actually now their segment is actually engagement on their segment, age segment, is higher than Instagram in the US globe. And here's the other thing, and I did see this on Bloomberg, so this is not my own idea. The Android...
What? Shock? Yeah. You're using someone else's idea.
Yeah,
so unlucky.
Oh, absolutely. On the show of greatness and all that. They have not... Their Android strategy has been a fucking disaster, right? So they've built a beautiful app for iOS, but Android's always been a problem, and it was a huge problem there last year when they did an update. most of the people I'd say in the US do not use Apple. That's a little FYI for our American
for the rest of the world.
We do not use Apple. We do not use Fisher Price baby phones in this part of the world. We use real phones with real real systems. But if they can get that
right,
I'm
just hiding my iPhone now.
Yeah, you better. You don't want to see Kieran's got a pink iPhone on his desk.
I do, actually. That's for testing purposes only. For my sideline
so
projects.
So he says.
But if you look at the potential to grow, right, outside the US, it's huge. Because if they get the Android piece right, their international growth could be massive.
Well, yeah. And where's the biggest growth market potential in the world at the moment? It's over in Asia. And that is a massive
Android
market.
Don't forget about Europe. There's 600 million people in Europe, right? Yeah. And they haven't even touched the sides here. So their potential to grow is huge. Their stock price, I feel, is probably... You could buy in now because I think there's going to be good growth in that company. If Spiegel can get out of his own way, because he's a bit of a disaster. He was, I guess he's a young guy who's a CEO foisted into that role. So he's learning as to go along. He's a product guy, not a tech guy. So he gets kind of wrapped up in his own bullshit, I suppose. But, if he can stay out of his own way and Snap lets the people they've hired to steer that company, I think they're in good position to grow the business. That ad network could be huge for them. If people start playing games... And we know what's going to be the reward of gaming, reward ads for like getting to the next level in the Snap games. If they can get that right, they will start printing money. And if they get the product right in Android, it will grow. It's just a matter of maintaining that growth and growing as those people get older. How do you keep them on board? How do you get the next generation? There's always going to be a TikTok or some other sort of Gen Z.
A newer,
app.
Shinier,
yeah,
slightly
absolutely.
Different
but
proposition.
If the Snap guys can make a utility, a go-to, I need to go talk to these people. I need to do this. I need to do that. It could be quite interesting.
So that just makes me want to ask you to reflect for a second back onto the Twitter results, because you were just saying, we were talking in general about maturity in this in the sort of social media landscape. Could we say not only is Twitter a slightly different proposition, as Kevin said, it's more of a conversational tool, if you like, but also it's kind of... It's been around for a lot longer than these other social media platforms. I can very well remember the early days of Kieran's usage of Twitter, and there wasn't that many people on it or involved in it. No one knew where it was going to go, and now it feels like it's just part of our sort of fabric. Is that why Twitter's experiencing a bit more stability? What's your view on that,
so,
Kieran, being such a quaint, such a keen Twitter user?
So just for the record, I'm not active on Twitter at the minute. I decided to close my account. Well, I still have the account. I use it for DMs. It's quite handy for that. And I do kind of dip in and out, but I don't participate anymore, right? Mm. Because I feel it's a time suck. But what they've done is, as Kevin says, they've made it sort of almost like a media channel, right? The ability to sort of kind of communicate to your audiences, whether you're an influencer or a president of the United States or a brand or even a media company. The ability to kind of have that instant sort of access to the world is huge, right? And I guess it's kind of like, it is a utility, right? It's like everybody uses Twitter now. It's a way to get instant news. If there are tragedies in the world, it's probably the first place you'll hear about it. Revolutions, earthquakes, all the rest of it.
Presidential updates.
Presidential updates. They've learned a lot, right? And it's been tough. And they've leaned very heavily on their ad tech stack. So MoPub is making them a good bit of money in the app world as well. That was a good acquisition. And they've kind of used the platform well. How much more they've got to grow, I don't know. It seems like they still have to clear up a lot of trolls. There is still a lot of shit on Twitter, a lot of like bots, a lot of hate speech.
I think there is huge, huge growth, as you mentioned earlier, in audience networks. So, if you look at, obviously, Facebook have dominated and built a multi-billion dollar audience network. Amazon, essentially are leveraging their logged in audience to create their Amazon ad platform. So I think with Snap announcing their audience network, I think that's they've got kind of a domino effect. They have made onboarding advertising into Snap a lot easier, which is probably part of the revenue growth. And now with an audience network, they can actually create an outlet that is unrestricted. Even if Snap shrinks or stagnates, they have got consent and they have got hundreds of millions of logged in users, and they can monetize them. It doesn't matter about daily active users. If you have an audience network, you can monetize them wherever they go. And with a good onboarding platform, good activation platform, and a good audience network, you know, that creates longevity for these guys as ad tech businesses. Mm. You know, if you look at like Foursquare, you know, you don't check in on Foursquare very much anymore, but they do have a small, thriving, location-based ad business.
Mm. Does very well.
Interesting.
And I think all the social platforms will move that direction. Yeah. I think also publishers with logged in data and e-com players with logged in data, you know, pretty much everyone's going to move, you know,
in that direction,
along that route.
That's a helpful point at which to move on to the next bit of the podcast, which is more of a focus on you, Kevin, and what you're up to at Powerlinks.
Yeah, super. So Powerlinks, for those who don't know, is a basically a marketplace business. So we have an open marketplace that has creative automation and relevance baked in. So our origin was all in the native space. We're kind of we're user experience first type people. So we began focused on native, and that's now extended into this open ecosystem where we've connected buyers and sellers. And we're kind of, as I said earlier, we're focused still on the display world and native world. And we're focused on actually using the power of hindsight to wind it back 15 years and say, okay, we got the trading technology right. We got the activation technology right. I think the ad tech world has done a great job of that. But there are still problems with the quality of data, and there are problems with the user experience. So we're focused on delivering responsive, you know, component-based, nice-looking ads. So whether it's display or video or mobile, it's all nativized. Everything looks responsive and bespoke to whatever environment you're on. And then the second big part of what we do is we enhance the data that flows through our marketplace. So if we're helping a buyer to buy from, you know, 100 different independent websites, we're populating data like the page level context and so on. And what that helps us to do is it allows us to onboard, you know, a combination of other ad tech partners as well as direct brand partners. And we help them to make their whole messaging process a lot more relevant and to really understand who their audience is with richer, cleaner data. And then when they target and deliver an ad, it is always going to be a responsive, good-looking, component-based ad. So it does kind of, you know, a lot of our focus at the moment is you know, using our marketplace to essentially build a community garden type approach. So, you know, whilst there are the big audience networks like Facebook and you know, Snap have just announced theirs, all of these other players, all of these e-com platforms and smaller social platforms and publishers, they're all in, you know, they're all investing in producing content. They're working with advertisers who have component-based ads. So even classified ads or social ads, you know, it's a headline, description, image. And we're giving them an outlet to essentially take that content and that demand and bring it to the open web with a lot of the usual programmatic targeting baked in. But also a lot of unusual extras like context and account-based marketing data. So really trying to create that ecosystem, and it's growing pretty quickly. Mm. We've got a couple of big partnerships, big partnership with MediaMath, and a couple of others that are coming up that we'll be announcing soon. But yeah, it's life's busy, and we're trying to go and take that 20% growth, and
that's what we like to hear.
Make it work for the independent, yeah.
So the partnership with MediaMath, is that specifically around them buying native inventory, or is it sort of, you know, is other sort of ad units?
It extends across all the different ad units. So I think the problem with kind of the native world is we've always talked about it as like a channel. It's not really a channel, you know. The way I think about channels, it's like open web, social, you know, search. And then the way I think about formats is kind of traditional display, IAB standard, video,
rich media,
audio, whatever it might be. It's any media format. Native is more an approach to the way that we render the ad, right? So native is the approach of making the ad somewhat custom and responsive to the environment. So for us, whether it's display, standard IAB display, or whether it's an in-feed ad or a content recommendation ad or a social ad or whatever, all of them can be natively delivered and can be adapted to be native to their environment. So we now go across multiple channels. You know, it's essentially an omni-channel marketplace, but our platform forces everything to become responsive and to be native to its environment. So what we're doing with the likes of MediaMath, and we have about another 20 or 30 DSP partners and content marketing platforms, and you know, it runs the gamut. We're bringing all of these folks into this marketplace and helping them to do that transition from standard display into this much more responsive way of delivering creative. And we're also helping them target... Oh, that's the alarm. We've
run out of time.
Limit.
we've still got time. Sorry.
No, yeah. Carry on. Finish your sentence.
What we're helping to do is basically just a refresh of the way that we do display. It's more responsive in the way that it's delivered to the consumer, which means that actually there is growth in the same white space. So where we take a standard display ad and we swap it for a nativized responsive ad in exactly the same pixel space, we normally see somewhere between a 2 and a 5-fold uplift in engagement, and that is buying ads at a slight premium, so the publisher gets more because the advertiser gets more performance. So we know that there are lots of folks who buy into that mentality. There's a whole range of native startups. They were our first partners, and now we're working with the more established players who've got big display businesses, and we're helping them to kind of modernize that and bring it
and make them more efficient and get
get
more money on.
So part of it is that user experience, and then the other part is, you know, taking the data that's normally available in OpenRTB, which does allow for a lot of data as standard, but what we find is that a lot of the data in OpenRTB, especially the optional data, tends to be either missing or formatted differently across different partners, or the data is derived differently. Same with audience segments, right? Some of them are modeled using lookalike models, and you don't really know how they came about. So a lot of what we do at PowerLinx is we try to deliver automated relevance through data quality. So we do a lot of data enrichment in our marketplace, which helps to connect those dots between first party data and publisher data, and kind of combining that to make for the best experience.
So that's the man. Do you plug into other networks or do you just work directly with publishers? I mean, you kind of have this kind of like almost a plug in all your demand, plug in all your supply type model.
So the spine of PowerLinx is the exchange or the marketplace, and then we have all these other onboarding technologies and trading technologies. So we have a bidder, we have a creative ad server, we have APIs for everything really. So we do focus more on demand because that's where we can help kind of generate the most value and where we can make the most significant changes. On the supply side, the bulk of our business is working with other SSPs and networks, generally anyone that can integrate with us through either an API or RTB. So we work with about 54 different supply partners. It's all the native guys, most of the standard display guys. And then, you know, there are new folks like Dianomi, for example, which is like the Taboola of finance,
yeah,
almost.
I know those guys. Yeah,
so we're bringing them into the programmatic space for the first time. So it is really building an ecosystem, and the common theme is responsive, better user experiences with richer data to drive relevance.
Sounds very exciting.
Yeah.
Okay, we really have run out of time.
Okay.
Excellent.
You looked like you wanted to say something else, Kieran.
No, thanks for Kevin for coming in today.
Yeah, thank you very much,
yeah,
Kevin.
Thanks, guys, for having me.
Our pleasure.
Do I get a badge now? Or?
You have appeared on the Mad Tech podcast. You definitely get a badge.
Yeah. Thanks. A t-shirt of me.
Which everybody wants.
Yeah. Lovely.
That was this week's Mad Tech podcast.